originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Jude Feld.
Hello again, everyone, from our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios. Welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, along with retired trainer turned Pope, that is the pontiff of the Pick Four himself, Jude Feld. I thought you might like that. A little something different for you, JT.
That's a new intro.
The Pope Jude. And we extend a special welcome to everyone joining us throughout North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, and everyone tuning in on our website on your smartphone, your tablet, or mobile device. You're doing that with our live streaming at horseracingradio.net, and happy to have you on board for the next hour. And Jude, here we go again. Last week, the program featured two of the most legendary trainers in the sport, with D-Wayne Lucas and Bob Baffert, who took the time to visit with me together. That was amazing, and if you missed it, head back to our website and listen to the podcast. Today, we flip it around, and we visit with a trainer just getting started with her very young career.
Yeah, it's great. Those guys are old. They're older than me, so they're really old. But it's great to have young trainers on. I love that. I love learning about their life, how they got into racing, what makes them want to take this on as a career, and looking forward to this interview.
Well, she's off to a very fast start indeed. She has saddled 15 horses. Five of those have won. That's right, five. That's a win percentage of 33.3%, which is almost unheard of. She is a native of Peach Bottom, Pennsylvania, which actually marks the Mason-Dixon line, believe it or not. And she is Brittany Trimble, who is with us now on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Brittany, welcome to the program.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
I had to do some homework on Peach Bottom, Pennsylvania. And
who came up with that name? I like it.
Where on earth is this place?
I'm glad you actually said Peach Bottom, because a lot of people start to make up their own little nickname for it. So.
Yeah, no, it would. I guess it's in southeast Pennsylvania, right?
Yep, it is. It's basically Lancaster County. So, you know, I grew up around a lot of Amish buggies, lots of farmland. Not a whole lot of horse racing, but I found a racehorse farm when I was a kid in Kirkwood, Pennsylvania, and I was lucky that that's how it all worked out.
Yeah, so how does a kid from Peach Bottom, Pennsylvania get interested in horse racing?
Well, I was in middle school, and they had a sort of like a field trip type thing out to Silmar Farm, which is Kirkwood, PA, and it's Ronnie and Betsy Houghton. And they kind of got some kids together just to go out and see the farm, and they were kind of recruiting some kids to help out for the summer. And I contacted them, and they said, you know what? They said, we're actually okay. We had a couple other people call, but our daughter has another farm about a couple miles down the road, and they said she's looking for some help, and her name is Wendy Kitteman, and their farm's called Breakaway Farm. So I started there when I was like, actually, it was probably before middle school, because I think I was 13. And I went over there and I started cleaning stalls, walking horses, washing horses, and I got hooked. It was just something that I'd wake my dad up at 5 o'clock and I'd say, you gotta take me to work on the weekends. And, you know, it just, I stayed doing it, and I was already sort of riding horses at the time. But they let me start getting on babies when I was like 15. So I was lucky that they kind of let me get riding racehorses then, because that's what really kicked it on.
Well, it's unusual in today's day and age that people would give you a shot like that, but that's really cool. And when you were that young, I imagine you were a little bit fearless and didn't mind all the things that go along with breaking babies.
Yeah, well, I think when you're that young and you're working hard on a farm and you love horses and you see everybody going out on horses and they all come back often and having fun and you're thinking, well, man, I want to do that. I want to jump on these things and go out and ride. Like that looks like the thing to do. So, you know, they gave me a shot and they taught me everything. I mean, they're the ones that got me. I mean, I can ride babies. You know, they taught me how to breed horses. And they were the ones that kind of got me my first job on the track, too. And I went to work for Tim Ritchie because they were breaking some horses and had layups for him. And he said, why don't you come down to Arkansas for the winter? And I did. I went to Oaklawn. And I worked for him galloping for a little while. And then it ended up that he needed someone to help run the barn. So he gave me a shot doing that. So that worked out really well because I learned a lot. He's very, very knowledgeable. And he taught me how to run a barn and gave me a lot of experience. So, you know, I think it's just meeting the right people along the way, isn't it?
Yeah, and, you know, all I'm hearing in this story, Brittany, is horses, horses, horses. Was there ever anything else that you thought about maybe doing when you were growing up?
You know, I went to school. You know, there was a time when my parents sort of pushed me going to school. And in between, I did. I took between high school. Well, obviously, I tried to go to college for a little while, and I was nearly finished. I was going to be just a vet tech. I thought I might get a job in, you know, an animal hospital or something. Obviously, a large animal hospital. I thought that might just be a good backup plan if I couldn't just ride for the rest of my life. Because at that point in time, you know, you're not really thinking about training. I just know I liked it. So I did that, and I just missed the racetrack. I probably had a semester left, and I said, I'm going to take a break. I'm just going to go back and gallop horses, and I never went back to school. So, you know, I never really played sports. It was always horses. I was just always horse crazy.
Yeah, well, when you love the game, and once it gets in your blood, I mean, there's nothing like the racetrack in the mornings. It's the best place on earth to be every morning if you can arrange it, in my opinion, anyway.
It is. It is, and it's funny because for someone like me, you know, my family doesn't understand. You know, I'm like the black sheep. I took off, and you know, it's 24/7. You don't really do holidays. You have time for nothing else. And I mean, they're understanding it now. They you know, they see that I'm doing well, and I'm out of my own, and you know, they're really proud of me. But it's hard for someone coming from a family that, you know, they're not horse racing people.
Have they come around since you started winning? I mean, you've had a meteoric rise in your early career. Have they kind of, you know, gotten on the bandwagon now?
Yeah. Actually, I was lucky. My mom and dad and my dad's sister, they were down here when Omai won. That was my first runner. And they were here for that, and it was pretty awesome because, I mean, it's not like I came down like, oh, man, my first horse is going to win. They were just here because it was my first starter, so it was really cool. But, no, they're really supportive. My mom, you know, my mom knows how to work Equibase now, and, you know, she calls me when she sees a horse in, and, you know, they definitely try and come down when they can. So it's nice. It gives them something, too, to look forward to.
Do they ever call you to ask you if your horse is going to win?
Yeah, my mom, she's always saying, oh, should I bet on this horse? And it's so funny. She'll be like, oh, man, I bet on it. I'm like, cool, how much you put on it? And she'll be like, $2. I'm like, whoa, you're a big bettor.
Yeah, that doesn't show a lot of confidence in her daughter. Come on. $2, Mom.
Right?
Talking with trainer Brittany Trimble here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Brittany, let's talk a little bit more about that first win on February 25th of this year. Oh My, who I'm going to assume, and tell me if I'm wrong, named for late sportcaster Dick Enberg. That was his catchphrase, owned by Peter Blum. Am I correct about that? Is that Oh My? Is that who she is named for?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah.
And you know, it's funny. Peter told me the namesake and the whole thing before she ran, obviously, but I'll be honest, sometimes things like that, you know, I'm listening, but I don't really, you know, I'm worried about other things with the horse, things like that. So, like, when she actually won, I was like, oh, like, you know, I got it. Because, obviously, Dave Rodman won the whole thing. It was really cool.
Yeah, Dave Rodman got it. He captured that perfectly in that call with Oh My. And, yeah, a very special moment for you and special for the late Dick Enberg, I'm sure, to see this horse cross the finish line first. I thought this was an interesting part of the story, too. You are engaged to jockey Sheldon Russell, and
yeah.
Sheldon was not aboard Oh My. That was Fergal Lynch. But Sheldon almost denied you that first win. Tell me about that.
Well, it's funny because when, I mean, if you train horses, you know, you're trying to get calls with riders and things like that. Honestly, I wasn't sure I was going to run Oh My in that spot. And Sheldon had ridden the Philly Dash before. I think she had run second before that, and he always really liked her. But he had wolfed Oh My in the morning, so I was really hoping he could ride her. And the last, I thought she needed another work. But the week before this race, he worked her. He came back and he said, "The filly's ready to run. Like, you know, don't think that you need to get another one into her." I'm like, "Okay, well, Sheldon had the call with the other filly, and you know, it's one of those things I didn't want to push. I liked my filly, but at the same time, you know, she hadn't run in a year. I would have hated for Sheldon to take off a winner to ride her. So, you know, we were lucky we got Fergal Lynch. She rode her filly great, and you know, I'm watching my filly. She's coming. You know, she's probably at the quarter pole, and I'm thinking to myself, if she doesn't win here, she's run out of trainer." And then the next thing I know, I see Sheldon running her down. I'm like, oh my God, well, at least one of us is going to win this race.
Would you still be engaged if Sheldon beat you that day?
Yeah, yep, we would. I love him. I love him past horse racing.
Wow.
She's a guy for British accents.
No, he's great. He's great. And, you know, you have to keep business and personal separate because, you know, that can get tricky. I think we do a really good job at it.
Yeah, we've talked to trainers before whose son-in-laws or daughter-in-laws ride for them. And you know, we talk about the dinner table conversations. If the horse had a bad trip or whatever, sometimes it's a little dicey. So has he ridden many winners for you?
Yeah, he won on a couple of them. We had a horse called Always that we really, really liked. He was doing everything right in the morning. We always started hearing a lot of talent. We made sure, you know, he really liked him. So he rode and won first out. That was our first winner together. And then I had a really nice filly named Magical he won on. And he's ridden a couple, you know, he's ridden a couple other ones that haven't won. But, you know, a lot of them are horses that they'll come around. Like, that you know, he'll be on them when they do get the job done. So that's important.
Well, I know owner Peter Blum has been a huge supporter of yours, Brittany. Tell me that story. How did that relationship come about?
You know, I worked for Jimmy Jerkins for a little bit, and Jimmy has a relationship with Peter, and I know that they, you know, they speak, they're friends, they have a good relationship, and I think Peter was just kind of looking for some horses somewhere, and I think Jimmy just kind of put in a good word for me, so I could never thank him enough for that. And I think I was at Delaware Park one day, and my phone rang with an Atlanta, Georgia number, and I answered it, and it was Peter, and you know, we just started talking, and he said, it was last fall, and he said, "I have a couple babies." He said, "When they're ready, I'd like to send them to you." And he had a three-year-old that they were kind of having some problems with. He was just kind of a bad actor. And he said, "You know, I'd like to give you a shot. I know you ride. Jimmy says you're a good rider. You know, I'd like to give it a shot." So, I mean, of course I said yes, and I was very fortunate I did because he's been awesome.
It's nice to train for somebody like that who's a national figure who's had so much success in the business, and he's probably a good sounding board for you too as you're going through your early paces as a trainer.
Yeah, no, he's awesome, and he's, you know, I speak to him often. He's, you know, it's not all business. He's you know, at the end of the day, in the beginning, yeah, he wanted to win and he wanted us to do well with the horses, but he was the one that really gave me the push to do it. So I feel like, you know, he has my best interest in mind. So I'll never forget that.
Do you get on a lot of your own horses in the morning, Brittany?
Yeah, yep. Well, there was a point there when I just kind of started. I think I had 7, and I was pretty much getting them all out myself. But now we're up to almost 16. So I have my friend Tal. She's a good friend of mine, but she works for me. Her name's Tally Lynch, and she's been helping me get on horses. But between she and I right now, we get on everything. And it's good because I can, you know, I can get on different horses every day. I work a lot of horses. Sheldon and I work a lot of horses. It's, you know, it's a good thing because, you know, I can get other feedback and,
if I don't agree, I can get on them the next day. You know, it's a really useful tool.
It sounds like you have a really good crew going. Talk about that. How hard it is to get help and get really good help.
Oh, it's very difficult. I've been very fortunate since I've been here. When I first actually came to Laurel, when the first couple feeder horses came in, I was actually running Treasure Pet Shed Row 2 here, and I kind of recruited the staff for him. And, you know, you find that first one good guy. You know, you find a really good groom who's on board, does everything right, and he kind of sets the standard. And, you know, as you get more horses in and things like that, you know, he finds another good guy. You know, it's like you have to start with one or two good guys that, you know, help create the crew. And then the exercise rider part, that's a whole nother thing. I think it'll always be hard to, you know, for me getting on horses. I mean, I'm critical. You don't just want any person just coming and getting on your horses, because you know how it should be done and you can do it. It's almost like you always feel like you could do it better kind of thing, which might sound bad, but at the same time, it sets a bar.
How do you describe your training philosophy, Brittany?
That's a good question. I would say I think I'm very open-minded, because I think you take something from everyone you've worked for. You know, I've worked for people who, you know, it's basic, you know, every horse pretty much does the same thing. It's a program, but you know, that doesn't work for me. It's they're all not the same, and patient too, because especially training for Peter, you know, he has young horses that aren't meant to be early horses. So, you know, you figure out, you have to develop them and take your time. And, you know, I think you just have to think outside the box and be ready to do anything with them. You know, you can't just assume they all can do the same thing.
When you're sizing up a horse when it first comes to the barn, what are you looking at? Are you looking at their conformation, their pedigree, a combination of things, and how do you decide what it is you want to do with the horse?
You know, yeah, conformation, pedigree, of course, that can take you a long way. But I think the thing that people sometimes forget is how important their mind is. I think, you know, you can tell very quickly when a horse walks in the barn. You know, you can tell if a horse has air about him. You know, yeah, if a horse is silly or something, you can change things. But a lot of times, if a horse is silly, that's just how it is. And I think that hurts them a lot of times. You can have a really talented horse that just can't get its mind together. And, you know, I've seen a lot of them. And it's like you try and do everything, but at the end of the day, they're their own worst enemy. So, you know, the horse comes in the barn, I don't want to do everything right, because it's not always going to be the case, but, you know, I think a good mind is just so important, especially if you're going to have a good horse down the line.
Well, and she's had several good ones already. 5 for 15 to begin that young career. Brittany, could you ever imagine you would start like this?
No. No. No, it's pretty incredible, actually. We have well-bred horses. You know, they did everything right in the morning. We always liked them. A whole different scenario when you walk them over in the afternoon. So, you know, I think the stars aligned. You know, we caught a couple short fields here and there. You know, we had the right post position draw. You know, it's all those little things have to line up. But at the end of the day, I'm just fortunate. You know, you have to have the horsepower too.
It's so hard for a small stable to get first-time starters ready to win right off the bat, but you seem to have a real knack for it.
Yeah, but again, it's a lot of times it's the horse too. You know, it's like, for example, the horse Always. I knew him. Before he, you know, he needed some time off before I got him, and I knew him before I actually got him in the barn, and we always liked him a lot. Just in the morning, I always thought to myself, you know, I think this horse will stretch out eventually, but he was just quick. He just, you know, his works from the gate. They were just, everything was just impressive about him. So, I mean, when you know, or you think you know, you have them tight enough, a horse like that, you know, they're just going to be good enough. They can jump out of there going three quarters and catch the lead. And, I mean, the way he was working in the morning, we were pretty confident he would keep going.
Yeah, you know, as I was getting ready for the show, Brittany, I went back and listened to an interview that you did shortly after your first victory with our good friend Scott Wyckoff at WBAL in Baltimore. And you had talked about making that walkover with your own horse for the first time before you won that race. What was that like?
It was a bit nerve-wracking. I think that, you know, I was so excited, but at the same time, I was almost like, I wanted it to get it over with. And even after she won, I think I was just, like, my mind was just all over the place. You know, it's kind of hard to just nail down, like, you know, a certain emotion or how you're feeling or, you know, anything. I think it's when it's all said and done, you, like, sit there and go back, you know, you go back through everything, and you're just like, wow. It's a pretty incredible feeling. It's like I've saddled, I can't tell you how many horses I've saddled when I work for Brad Cox and Jimmy and Tim Ritchie. It's like when you put that task on your own horse, you're sitting there going, oh my God, I hope don't mess this up. Don't want this saddle to slip.
Yeah, it's a whole different feeling when it's your name in the program than somebody else's. And it's not that you take your job as an assistant trainer lightly, because it's very important, but when it's your name out there, it's a big difference.
Yeah, it's almost unexplainable. I think, and that's something that Sheldon and I've talked about, because, you know, he says to me, like, on the day that I'm stressed out, did you let things affect you like this when you were an assistant? I'm like, yeah, I always took it seriously. You know, it was always important, and you always want to do a good job, but it's hard to explain when it's your own name. You know. I'm a bit of a perfectionist, and, you know, something goes wrong, you're the one that has to answer the questions. It's a whole different thing.
You know, we don't often think about trainers being stressed out. It seems like they just go to work, they train their horses, and then they run them in the afternoon. It sounds like there's a lot of stress associated with being a horse trainer, Brittany.
Well, you know, it's everything. It's more than just the horses. It's the people. I mean, your phone never stops ringing. You know, it's 24/7. You don't get a break. I mean, you know, if I'm going to go home in the afternoon, I can't shut my phone off. You know, it's things like that. It's just, it's all the time. And we love it. We wouldn't do it if we didn't love it. But, you know, people who don't do it, I don't think they would understand.
Yeah, nobody really understands. They think you just go out there and drink coffee and schmooze with the other trainers in the morning. It looks like the most relaxed lifestyle of all time. But you've got all these other things to deal with.
Maybe one day it gets to be that point. I'm not sure. Maybe just starting out. I mean, I was lucky to go home and change my clothes the other day before I ran my horse at Pimlico.
Jude, you did that for 20 years, training horses in California. Does it ever get easier?
No, I mean, it's always the same type of thing. You know, it's just like what Brittany says. You've got a million things going on. You've got your clients to deal with. You've got your help to deal with. You know, you've got the business part of it, paying the bills, talking to veterinarians. You've got all of those things that you have to do. And on the face of it, it just looks like the most fun thing that you could ever. Everybody wants to be a trainer, right?
Yeah.
But if it was easy, everybody would do it. And everybody doesn't do it because, first of all, you're sleep deprived. And then, you know, second of all, it's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And so after a while, it can get to you. But you love it so much. It's like the only job that I've ever had that I could not wait to get to work in the morning. And that comes early, right? It's 4 o'clock in the morning and you cannot wait to get to the barn. I mean, you jump out of bed, you put on your clothes, you put your boots on at the door and you go to the track and you cannot wait to get there to see what's going on and what's happening that day. It's just amazing.
Or if you wake up in the morning, you're a little tired and you think, man, I'd love to lay here for another hour, but you can't get there. It's like, oh, you know, what was the big deal about getting up? You know, it always feels better when you get there.
Brittany, I know there's people listening that, you know, obviously have never been a trainer and they're listening to Jude and listening to you talk about it. What is it that makes you, that just drives you to want to get to the barn and it kind of draws you to the barn and to the racetrack every morning? What's that factor?
Well, the first thing is you love the horses. You know, if I have 15 horses in the barn, you know, it's exciting to get there. We love the horses and we want to do well with them. Of course, winning races, there's no thrill like it. But, you know, my thing is I'm very detail oriented. So I'm always, you know, it's, your brain's always turning. So I think my thing is that I want to get there. And I feel like every day there's something we can do better, you know, to make the horses better. I don't know. I don't know if you can even explain it.
Do you experiment with different things from time to time, or do you kind of have a set routine and you say, hey, this is how we train racehorses in this barn?
No, when I do my set list, it's different every day. I have a pony. A lot of horses go with the pony. You know, different equipment, things like that. The gallops, you know, I might jog, longer jogs with horses, and other horses maybe don't need that. It's a lot of different things. The babies, I love to take the babies just and hack them around the backside and do things like that with them, you know, just, you know, let them see things and do something different besides just going to the racetrack every day. I think, you know, those are all the little things that down the line hopefully help develop horses into good horses rather than just going out there and doing the same gallop every day. Because horses get sour too, you know. They don't want to go out there and do the same thing every single day.
I think I've heard you talk about that, JT.
Yeah, well, you know,
you got to change it up a little bit.
Yeah, getting into the horse's mind is the number one thing, I think. I mean, if you can figure out what makes your horse happy and do that, then that's like three quarters of the battle, really.
Yeah, that's something that I really picked up from Jimmy Johnson. You know, I think some people are really good conditioners. I think Jimmy is just a seriously good horseman because he would think outside the box and he would notice things just in the barn. You know, he'd come back in the evenings at like 8 o'clock along the night and just, you know, look around the barn and just, he would notice things about horses that you wouldn't notice unless you were there. And I don't think a lot of people do that.
She's trainer Brittany Trimble. She is with us on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Brittany, only about a minute or so before we have to get to the bottom of the hour commercial break here, but as you were growing up, were there certain trainers that you followed or looked up to and you said, hey, maybe someday that could be me?
You know, when I was a kid, I'd always watch the Kentucky Derby and things like that. But, you know, it was their names like Dwayne Lucas and Bob Baffert, of course, everyone knows them. And those are always the horses that you're, you know, paying attention to and watching in the big races. But I think, you know, also when I was young, and I was just getting started at the horse farm, I think it took me, you know, a couple years until I was a bit older to really catch on to like all those types of details with the racing aspect. But I would still say like Lucas and Baffert, they're two of the top guys, you know. And I love like when I see a interview with Wayne or something, I just think he's, you know, he's just an awesome person, and you see the success he's had. So.
Yeah, good role models to have, guys like Dwayne Lucas and Bob Baffert. And again, for folks that are just tuning in, if you missed it, head back to our website. You can check out the podcast of this program and our visit last week with Wayne Lucas and Bob Baffert together. They joined me here on Trainer Talk. It was a pretty special interview. We're going to take a quick break. We will come back second half with trainer Brittany Trimble is up next right here. Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton.
Selected sales, superior results. Nominate now to Fasig Tipton's selected yearling sales, which are stronger than ever. The July sale for precocious athletic yearlings, the prestigious Saratoga sale, where leading buyers have searched for their next champion or classic winner for nearly 100 years, and the New York bred sale, which offers the cream of the New York bred crop. Learn more and nominate at FasigNoms.com. Fasig Tipton selected yearling sales, stronger than ever.
Bloom Racing.
Sky Diamonds takes the lead. Sky Diamonds to win, going away.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Midnight Bizou with another assertive final furlong. The top filly of the meet deservedly wins the Grade 1 Santa Anita Oaks.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Ross Anderson!
and to stand the best. Windstar Farm, dedicated to the dream.
Kentucky Downs is home to five outstanding days of racing beginning September 1st, highlighted by 14 stakes races, four graded stakes, and a record $10 million in purses, with increases to the Calumet Farm Kentucky Turf Cup and the Taurus Mile. The new Kentucky Downs Juvenile Turf Sprint will serve as a stepping stone to the new Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf Sprint, and all Kentucky breds race for $130,000 in maiden events and $145,000 in allowance races. Kentucky Downs, beginning September 1st.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Sister Patricia driven on the outside and Bash is in third with four or five to make up, and they're into the stretch. The outside Sister Patricia to the rail is Oh My, and here comes Bash picking up slowly but surely to the center of the track. It is Oh My, Sister Patricia. Bash on the outside, hard ridden to get up on the far outside. Here comes Bash. Oh My is trying to hold. Oh My! First starter, first winner for Brittany Trimble Trainer. Bash was second, then it's Sister Patricia, Lemon Drop Kitty, and Cut Time.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on HRRN. Mike Penna, Jude Feld in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios. Happy to have you back with us as we continue to visit with trainer Brittany Trimble, who saddled her first starter and her very first winner on February 25th, Dave Rodman had the call, Oh My, named for the late sportcaster Dick Enberg, and winning the fourth race at Laurel on that memorable February afternoon. And it was a strong effort for Oh My, and maybe even a better result that the runner-up did not get up and win the race, because the runner-up ridden by Brittany's fiance, Sheldon Russell. And he comes in second. I think that was music to the ears of Brittany Trimble. Brittany, welcome back, and happy to have you back on board and looking forward to the second half of the show. A little trip down memory lane for you there.
Yeah, that gives me goosebumps. Dave nailed that, that's for sure.
How many times have you watched the replay?
Oh, gosh. I heard a ton. I couldn't even tell you how many times I watched the replay. And it's funny, too, because a lot of times I'd jump in my car and it would hook up the Bluetooth and I'd be driving and I would hear the call and I'd be like, oh my gosh, it was so hooked up to my phone. So the call is what always got me.
Yeah, well, Sheldon's a very smart man, because they say, happy wife, happy life.
He is a smart man.
Don't even think of running past my horse in the stretch.
He was trying. For the record, go back and watch that replay. He was riding hard.
Yeah, and it sounded like it. Dave Rodman mentioned that in the call. Hard ridden, trying to get up to get the victory. And trust me, Sheldon, I know Sheldon well enough where, yeah, he's happy that you won, but he wants to win that race too. And he would have been just fine with making you wait another day to get your first win.
He sure would have, but, you know, the way it worked out, it was unfortunate, too, that he couldn't have ridden my first winner. I mean, that would have been picture perfect, but trust me, he was thrilled.
When's the wedding, by the way?
I'm sorry?
When's the wedding?
It's August 26th, so we're coming right up on it. So training, running a business, and planning a wedding, that keeps us on our toes, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a big task.
Yeah, well, it's funny because we've gone and, you know, you meet with the florists and you do all these things and in between doing a million other things. So it's not really what we're really focused on. So I asked him a question. I said, yeah, that's fine. And I looked at him the other day and I said, do you know anything as far as, like, how the wedding planning's gone? Like, do we really know what's going on? But it's going to be great. It's sneaking up on us really, really quick.
Are you getting married back in Pennsylvania?
Actually, we're doing it here. It's in Ellicott City, and we actually live right outside Ellicott City in Catonsville. So Sheldon has a lot of family that'll come over from England, and we found a place where we can just kind of put everybody up, and, you know, it's a one-stop shop, and
you know, my family can come up. It's not too far for them. So, and it's not far for us either.
Perfect. Everybody can be in one place and get it done. Then it's back to work, huh? No honeymoon for trainers and jockeys.
No. We were really trying to figure out how we could do it. And it's just not the right time of year either. There's no way to get away. But maybe in, let's say, January, February, when the weather's not too good, we can sneak away for a couple of days. We'll just do something, you know, spur of the moment kind of thing.
Yeah, that's the other thing people don't think about with being a horse trainer. We had Nolan Ramsey on the program not too long ago. Nolan, an assistant for trainer Mike Maker, he was getting ready to marry former jockey Katie Clawson, and they had to schedule their wedding on a dark day so that they could make sure that they could get the wedding in, and then he could get right back to work for Mike Maker right afterwards.
Yeah, no, that's just it. And that was the thing we were trying to figure out when to do it. Actually, Sheldon thought it would be a good idea to do it the Sunday after Preakness because he thought there'd be more people in town. And I was like, no way. I was like, there's no way we can make that happen. That's just crazy. We're too busy of a weekend. So we came, we decided to do it in August in Timonium because, that should be a little bit more of a quiet time for us. They leave Worrell. And, he might ride out of town a little bit, but he probably won't ride much at Timonium.
Brittany, earlier you talked about following the careers of people like Bob Baffert and Dwayne Lucas. And we know what just happened at Pimlico about a week ago with Bob Baffert and Justify winning the Preakness Stakes and Wayne Lucas and Bravazo coming in second. They're very close. They're very good friends. Have you had a chance to sit down and visit with them at all?
When I was at Churchill, I spent quite a bit of time at Churchill, and I got to know Wayne pretty well. I'm very good friends with his main assistant, Bass Nickel, so I would spend some time in the barn. And, Wayne, I have not spent time with Baffert now, but, I've sat down with Wayne, and you love to listen to him and hear what they have to say, and, just their thoughts and opinions. You take everything and put it in your back pocket because they've seen a lot and they know a lot.
Yeah, it's always great to sit down with trainers like that. And I remember when I was training, Farrell Jones, who was a great California trainer and the father of Gary Jones, I would go out to Farrell's farm on Tuesdays and I would call it the Farrell Jones University and just sit there and listen to him talk and go over the horses that he had on the farm. And he'd talk to me about how to take care of this ailment or that ailment or how to shoe a horse a certain way or whatever. It was invaluable experience and well worth the time to drive out there a couple hours and a couple hours back. I mean, it was just fantastic. So it's great when you have that opportunity.
Yeah, and, I worked for Jimmy Jerkins. I've mentioned that already, but that he's another one. To me, I just feel like he's a legend. He's trained some really good horses. He's very knowledgeable. And if when I had the chance to really ask him questions and pick his brain, he has so much knowledge, and he could teach me so much, and he's such a good guy. So, those are really important things, especially when you're training and trying to figure things out.
Brittany Trimble with us here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on HRRN. Brittany, let's talk about some of those trainers that you've had the privilege to work with. You talked about working with Tim Ritchie in the first half of the show and getting your start with him. I know you worked with Ron Moquette for a while and then Jimmy Jerkins and Brad Cox. So start with Tim Ritchie. What are some of the things that you learned from him that you're still using today?
Tim did some things. He used to do like let horses do long 2-minute licks to really get some stamina into them. And, he would do really long jogs with horses. He kind of had a bit of a show background, I think, when, that was a little bit of his style and, an old school style. So, I've had horses come on that, they might just need some time to come around and take a long time to warm up or something. And, the first time I think I sent Tally out on one, they said jog 2 gallop 1. She just looked at me like I was crazy. But, when you see those things start to work, that's when you're like, that's cool. That's really cool that I learned that from him and they work. Tim was great. He was really, really good in that sense.
Did you go right from working with Tim to Ron? Is that how that worked?
You know, I worked for actually, I worked for Jonathan Shepherd too. I hate that I didn't mention him yet because Jonathan Shepherd's awesome, and he was really, really helpful when I got started here as well. So, you know, I learned a lot from Shepherd as well. I galloped at Keeneland for him for a bit. I got him some really nice horses, and you know, he's definitely an outside the box thinker. You know, there's a lot of that. I think sometimes now if something's not working, you know, you go back and say like, well, what would he have done? Of course he trains a lot out at the farm, and you know, he has a lot of different options in a sense, but he's another one that I you know, you think back and he'll do all sorts of different things. You know, you might work a horse and it might work too slow, and he'll say, turn around, he'll say, blow that horse out a quarter, and you're like, what? That's crazy. But you know, there are things that work, and he's done it before, and you see that.
Yeah, sometimes you have to do things to get the best of a horse. You have to figure out what's the deal and how to make them do what you want to do in order to further their career. And that's really the fun part, I think, of what we do is figuring all that stuff out. It's you know, a lot of people think horses are like machines and you just take them out there and work them 5/8 and then 6 days later you do it again. And it couldn't be further from the truth. I mean, there's so many little nuances that each horse has and how you prepare them mentally and physically for the race is the crux of the game. And it's what keeps you entertained and wanting to go to the barn every day.
Yeah. Well, after I worked for Shepherd, I went to work for Brad Cox. I'm not sure that my timeline is exactly the truth, but I went to work for Brad. And Brad was probably the one that made me realize that I wanted to train when I went to work for him. You know, I remember having a conversation with him in the office, and he just said, do you want to train horses one day? And I said, you know, yeah. And he was the one that kind of let me go out on my own. He sent me to New York with some horses, and I, you know, that was the first time that I was alone with horses, and I had to do everything and make all the decisions. And he trusted me. You know, he gave me the rein, and he made me realize that I could manage it, I could do it. And but he was still there, you know, to offer advice and help and still teach me things. And he was the one, I think, that really kind of made me realize I wanted to do it. And I thought, I love the way he handled his business, and you know, he handled people, and I thought he's obviously a great horse trainer. There's no question about that. So, you know, I would thank Brad, you know, for definitely giving me that push.
Yeah, Brad Cox, one of the true stars in the sport today. And then you go to work for another one in Jimmy Jerkins, who you already mentioned a couple of times. But Jimmy, I think the world of him as a horseman first and foremost, and you know, as a trainer too. But there's a difference. There are horsemen and there are trainers, and Jimmy just fits perfectly into both of those categories. And I would say that Brad does too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. They're both the kind of people that – well, not program trainers for sure. You know, they do what the horse needs, and it shows that, you know, obviously. And, you know, I think Jimmy was really special because, like I said, he would get inside a horse's head and, you know, think he would really think outside the box. And, you know, that's what's important, I think. That's what gets you there.
Visiting with Brittany Trimble on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Brittany, just getting started with her career, 15 starters, 5 of those have won. So she is off to a fast start. Brittany, what's so hard about this game, huh? It seems like a pretty easy game.
Yeah. it just seems like you should just be able to walk them over there and they should just run off the screen every time. it's not that easy.
Well, you spelled out how much work this really is, this profession. It is a tireless profession, and you have to be completely dedicated and completely focused. Otherwise, in my opinion, you just can't succeed, can you?
No, you can't. You know, it could be something as simple as you have to answer your phone. You know, you might miss a really important call. You always have to be ready. I mean, you just, you know, if you're having a moment where you just you need 5 minutes to yourself and you take it, but you just have to kick on. You just have to push forward because it's all worth it in the end. And I think horse trainers have to be very driven people. That's something that I've learned is that, you just go. You just get it done. You want to accomplish everything. And, you know, we're goal-oriented. We want to do the best for the horses. And, you know, hopefully at the end of the day, everything ends up paying off.
You kind of have to just look at it like you're having fun every day, right? Isn't that the best way to enjoy the game, even though it's long and tedious?
Oh, absolutely. That's just it. You know, it's you know, the long hours and things like that. When you come back to the barn in the afternoon, it's like, you know, everybody's happy. They're happy to be there. You have to have a good attitude. You have to like the people that you're working around, you know. And it's like the help. You don't want to walk into the barn in the morning and not say good morning to everybody and not be happy to be there because, you know, that starts to affect everybody else. So, you know, I walk in the barn every day and I say good morning and I ask everybody how they are and, you know, I talk to them and everybody has a good attitude and I'm happy to be there. And, you know, it goes a long way. It keeps everyone's attitude, you know, in the right place. And me too, you know, it's, you don't want to go into a workplace every day and just be like, oh my gosh, there's this much work to be done. It's so much to do and be miserable about it. It's not right. And, you know, we're fortunate to get up and do what we love. A lot of people get up and go to work and they really do hate their job. You know, we pick the profession where there's a lot of work, but at least it's what we love.
Brittany, what's the biggest lesson that you've had to learn since going out on your own?
What is the biggest lesson I've had to learn? I think patience. I'm pretty high strung, and I think I've had to learn to just, you know, I'm not going to say sit back, but I've had to learn to just take a deep breath and, you know, tomorrow's a new day kind of thing. You know, you know, the end result isn't today. I think that, you know, that's something that I've really had to just, you know, take a deep breath and move forward the right way. I think that's important.
Yeah, when you're an assistant trainer for somebody, they're basically calling the shots and you're carrying out their wishes. But when it's you that it's your wishes, sometimes that gets in the way. You want something badly enough and you are thinking about it constantly, and it's really hard sometimes to take that deep breath and go, you know, we've got several weeks to get this done. We don't have to have it done tomorrow.
Yeah, and the other thing too is and I knew this obviously when I was an assistant, that they're horses. They're not perfect. They're creatures. You know, you can't I am a perfectionist, so when I walk in the barn and, you know, everything's not gonna be perfect every day. So you know, if you let that affect you, you drive yourself crazy. So I've definitely learned to just take a deep breath and, you know, reevaluate the situation the next day.
How do you handle adversity?
It's better.
Great answer.
I think it's all a learning curve, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, Richard Mandela, you know, he's not, you know, he's very serious about horses and training, and as you might expect from a Hall of Fame trainer. But, you know, he says every day you walk in, there's going to be something wrong. And I, yeah. I know that basically that's true, but really, I don't know if that's maybe the right way to go about it. I mean, you know that there's going to be some things that you're not going to like, or pitfalls, or things that happen to horses and that you're going to need to take care of. But I think maybe a little brighter attitude could get you by a little better.
Well, it's funny you say that because I've worked for, you know, some of the guys I've worked for, you know, the help, for instance, would be like, you know, everybody, when we win a race, would be really excited and happy. And, you know, it'd be like, oh gosh, the trainer's going to be in a bad mood. And it's like, well, why? We just want to race. And it's like, you know, it's like when things are going good like that, something's going to go bad. You know, like you almost always have to be ready for something bad to happen. And that's a horrible way to have to live. But it's almost like we set ourselves, like, I don't want to set myself up for disappointment.
Right.
Brittany, do you set goals for yourself?
Yeah, I do. I try to be realistic. You know, I have a friend who trains horses, and he, you know, he said he's always talking about like running a horse in the Kentucky Derby and things like that. And you know, we were talking about one day, and I said, you know, that wouldn't be the one thing that I'd be trying to do. I'd love to have like a Breeders' Cup horse. Like, I think that would be like a big, you know, a big thing, because I have a lot of horses that, you know, they should get better with age, and I think it'd be awesome to have horses good enough for that you have around for a long time.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that would be one of those situations where it would make sense, right?
Right. I think it's very sensible on your part, because there's only a certain type of horse that fits into a Kentucky Derby, and a lot of times horses run in there that don't really fit anyway. But the Breeders' Cup, you have so many opportunities to run different kinds of horses in races that they might actually have a chance to win. I think that's very sensible, and I've never heard anybody say that before on this show or anywhere else. That's really cool.
Well, with that being said, now, if we were sitting on a three-year-old, look like you could go to the Derby. I'm not saying we're not going.
No, you're just going to save it for the Breeders' Cup Classic, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
I don't know. I that's just, you know, you get to the Breeders' Cup, and, you know, I've seen horses that, you know, that's the main goal every year, and then they're around for a while, and I think that's awesome.
Brittany, this show obviously presented by Fasig Tipton. They're a huge supporter of many of these Trainer Talk shows, have been for a long, long time. Do you see yourself at some point going to the sales and picking out horses with clients and then training those babies?
Yeah, absolutely. That's something that, that's how you get new good stock in the barn and get new clients, and absolutely. And, you know, they just have the Tamarnam sale here. And to be honest with you, I hate that I didn't have any time to make it over there. But I did have – I had some people that were, you know, they were trying to get some horses bought, and they were trying to send them to me. And, you know, that's all new – you know, you want new blood in the barn, and, you want to have those connections with people and have your face seen at the sale, and – you know, pick horses that you like and think you can develop. It's, you know, that's important.
Yeah, the sales are a big factor, and as you grow and get more clients, it'll definitely happen. But anytime you get a chance to go to the sale, it's good practice to watch the horses, the bidding, the whole nine yards, and get a grasp of what's going on.
Yeah.
Brittany Trimble with us here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, and she's off to a fast start, 5-for-15 to kick off this young career. Brittany, how many horses do you have in training now?
I have 16 right now. That's keeping us busy. I think it's a really good number at this stage. You know, I kind of went from, I was probably at like 8 or 9, and then I kind of got the, you know, I had a bunch ship in, and I had a couple odd ones come in too right around the same time. And, you know, it was almost like we doubled pretty quick. And luckily, I have the staff, and, you know, everything's fine. It's a great number, but I think it's nice to kind of, you know, for it to slowly build up so it's not just, you know, overwhelming.
Yeah, the multiples of 4 are always good, because you, as a trainer, you have those situations where you're probably paying more people than you need to, but you don't want to get rid of them because they're good people. So it can be costly for a trainer. You have to watch that very closely as you're going along.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, that's the other thing, too. You know, if you have, let's say, in this scenario, 10 horses for a month, you know, you get paid for 10 horses, and you have 10 more horses ship in that first week of the next month, well, you know, you have money in the account to pay enough people for 10 horses, but now you have 20 horses. So, you know, it's nice with a gradual progression. You know, it's not overwhelming. You know, more than just the financial aspect as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think trainers should collect first and last month's rent, so to speak. I think it would be a lot easier to deal with if you could do that.
Yeah.
It would make a lot more sense. Brittany, just a couple of minutes left before we have to wrap it up. I always like to kind of end by asking trainers to tell us something about themselves that people might not know. So I know you've laid out how challenging this job can be and the time constraints involved, but if there is a rare chance for Brittany Trimble to be away from the racetrack, away from the barn, what are some of the other things or hobbies that you might have that you enjoy?
You know, Sheldon and I like to, when I'm not as busy as I am currently, we love to go running. You know, we like to be outside, and we're very active, and we haven't done it in a long time. Sheldon's really fit, obviously. He's himself in tip-top condition, and I always like to do it. It's something, I clear my head. I run a couple half marathons, but, as many horses as I'm galloping and as busy as I am and active in the barn, I really just don't have the energy. But, I'm hoping one day I can get back to that. I'd love, we've always talked about running a marathon together. So, maybe down the line, that's a goal that we should accomplish together.
Yeah, that would be really cool, huh? I think that's great.
It sounds crazy. I mean, who really wants to run a marathon? But
well, I don't, but other people do. My kid's mom, she was a fantastic runner. She didn't really like competition, though. She liked to run on her own, and it was mainly to clear her mind. And she used to run 7 miles every day. So I understand the runner's mentality, and I'm very careful of runners on the road when I'm driving. But I know that's it, for a lot of people, it's a really peaceful place for them when they go for a run, and I think that's fantastic.
It is, and it's and with training horses and things, it's funny. I would always like take things how I feel and handle things and not having a good day, and I almost kind of use it in a sense with training horses. But it is, it's good for your mind. And we're very competitive people, so if in a sense, if we think one day we might run a marathon, it gives you, it's not a push, it's a drive. It's something to work for.
Well, Brittany, we appreciate the visit here. All the best moving forward. Congratulations to you and Sheldon, and keep it rolling. You're off to a great start.
Thanks, guys. Thanks so much. Take care.
All right, Brittany Trimble with us here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. Don't forget, if you missed any portion, head to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out the podcast. A couple of spots there where their cell phone service was a little spotty. We apologize for that, but hope you enjoyed the visit. She is a bright young star in this sport. That is trainer Brittany Trimble.
Yeah, she's definitely going places.
Yeah. All right, our thanks to our producer, Lee Delapina. For Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next time here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton.